Hey, it's Brian. If you're considering getting your master's in the sports industry, it's time to consider Georgetown University. Georgetown offers a part-time master's in sports industry management that prepares you to excel in the global sports industry. This program is ideal for working professionals because it offers flexible options to take classes online, on campus, or through a combination of both. So you do not have to interrupt your entire career to earn your degree. You'll leave this program with the communication, business, and leadership strategies that will position you for success. To learn more about the program, visit scs.georgetown.edu/workinsports. One more time, I really want you to check this out. Just go there, check it out, get some more information, and learn about this program. It could be your perfect match. scs.georgetown.edu/workinsports. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. There's a bit of an unfortunate truth in the sports industry. Sometimes job titles can mean very different things to different people in different organizations. Take the term marketing for one. People tell me all the time, I want to work in sports marketing. And I say, great. What specifically are you trained to do in marketing? What do you want to do? Because marketing is a very broad term. Marketing could be project managing billboards or email outreach, tossing t-shirts on game night, or it could be Google paid advertising, sponsorships, and activation. So when you see a job listing for a marketing manager, make sure you read the job description, understand what they want and what they're demanding out of this role, and tailor your resume and cover letter for that specific role and the demands of it. Another term that has a pretty wide berth is player development. Taken on its surface, you are in charge of developing the player, right? I mean, player development makes sense, right? But there are really two different aspects of this: on the field of play and off the field of play. You will see, as you look through job descriptions and job openings, you will see player development roles that involve assisting athletes, whether they be in college or the pros. A lot of times this is in college, but you'll see in the pros too, but it's people, player development roles that help the athletes adjust to their new life. Getting settled, knowing their way around town, where to get food, how to get it set up with a financial advisor, all of those vital things. Now, these are really important roles that colleges, like I said, and pro organizations, they take on to make sure they get the most out of their investment. They spend a lot of time recruiting and traveling to identify players and bring them into their system. Well, it only makes sense if you treat them and refine them and make them set up to succeed. If a player is worried about having a place to live or knowing what classes to take, they're more likely to be distracted and not perform at their best. But there's another type of player development, and that's what we're going to focus on today. That is the magic that happens in organizations between acquisition and full potential. Let's use baseball as an example. Player A gets drafted. They are 18 years old, just graduated high school, and now they are in your system. Remind you, they're 18 years old. Unless their name is Mike Trout, it's a long way to a major league city. Player development is everything that happens between acquisition and making the major leagues. How to play, how to eat, how to train, how to mentally prepare, how to practice, how to identify and work on your weaknesses, how to understand game strategy and organizational philosophy. These development plans are all customized for each individual in the organization. Having a plan and executing it is the best way to make your investment in a player reach its true potential. It's a fascinating process, one that happens behind the scenes of sports organizations at all levels, because success equates to value, and failure costs time, money, and effort. You will notice the teams in every sport that are the best at player development, that are the best at investing in their assets and going after acquisition and developing the whole player, those are the teams that find success year in and year out. Over the last 40 years, one of the most respected men in baseball team management and player development has been Dan Duquette, former GM of the Red Sox, Orioles, and Expos. The list of players he has acquired and developed into major league talent is stunning. I will not list them all here. It's too long. But what is really exciting is that Dan is teaming up with our friends at Sports Management Worldwide to share his knowledge and teach an 8-week online course in baseball player development. He joined me earlier this week to talk about his career, becoming an executive, decision-making processes, trusting yourself, and an overall breakdown of what he'll teach in his upcoming class. So here he is, 2-time Major League Baseball Executive of the Year, Dan Duquette. Hey, Dan, how's it going today?
Good, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing. I mean, with your decades of experience in the baseball industry, it's so great to have you on the show to share so much of your background. So thanks for coming on.
Yep, my pleasure.
So I feel like there's a lot we have to talk about and discuss, but let's start out with this. You reached the highest heights of the sports industry, 2-time Executive of the Year in Major League Baseball, and yet you come from somewhat of an interesting background as an English major in college. So I wonder, as that translates to today's sports industry, do you think you can still become a 2-time Executive of the Year as an English major, or are we living in a completely different world with different expectations now?
Yeah, well, I mean, the good news is that if you get a broad-based education, which is a liberal arts education, you'll be able to use your head. And, you know, a lot of executives, I graduated from Amherst in 1980, but Harry Dalton, who hired me, was an English major. He graduated in 1950 from Amherst. And I think a lot of the executives today have had a broad-based background in liberal education to give them a springboard to go on and do well in pro sports. I think the training is to teach you how to think and use your skills. And, if you have a passion for something, which I did for baseball, you should be able to find your way.
It makes you wonder if we all look at the wrong things when we hire staff. I mean, I think we get so locked in on this concept of having an exact match to a skills profile and a sports background and this and that and whatever. And yet you might be missing out on people who, like you said, have critical thinking skills and passion. Are we going about it the wrong way when we look at hiring?
Well, I think there's certain skills that are in demand in the workplace, and in all workplaces, one skill that's always in demand is dependability, And another skill that's in demand is enthusiasm. And, those are two criteria that I think will go a long way towards helping people, not only find a vocation that they feel strongly about, but also help them do well in that vocation. So, of course, you need skills, and jobs require specific skills. But on a macro basis, enthusiasm and intelligence and thinking skills, they'll help you in just about any job.
Yeah, it is interesting looking through a lot of the profiles of Major League Baseball executives, and actually across a lot of sports now, you see GMs that come from a economics or a statistics background. And that seems like it's probably a big departure from when you first got into the industry, as well as we become more numbers based. Is that the way you kind of see it as well?
Well, yeah, I think, now there's a huge demand for data. And big data will drive the decisions. But I think that a good executive will know how to synthesize the data, but also to weight it properly to help them make the good decisions. I thought when I was younger, when I got into an executive job, that, this will be easy. You make one choice out of a couple of choices. Always pick the right choice. But it's like when you get into these executive jobs, your choices aren't black and white. There's a lot of gray in those choices. And the good executives know how to balance their choices. And frankly, a lot of times your choices, they won't be very good. You'll be required to choose one from a list of many choices that aren't the ones that you want. I think that, like I said, if you have a you know, critical thinking skills, you know, and some, well, what do you call it? Some good values.
Yeah.
You know, a good temperament. You don't let your emotions get the best of you all the time. You know, you should be able to make some good decisions to help your own career.
So most people know you as a Major League Baseball general manager and executive, but you were a dual sports athlete in college. You played linebacker and catcher at Amherst, which is a great school, Amherst College in Massachusetts. And I've read for years when you were playing college ball, you were always talking up the scouts that came to your games, picking their brain. Was this just because you were a curious person and that kind of fits in with that dependability and intellect and all those things, like that natural curiosity? Or did you kind of have it in the back of your mind back then even that you wanted to pursue a career in baseball?
Well, I you know, I was an athlete in high school, and I was a much better football player than baseball player. And I went to Amherst because I thought I could play and participate in both the sports there. I got accepted at Princeton, and I wasn't sure I could play both baseball and football at the level it was required by Princeton. So I ended up going to Amherst, and that was the right choice. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a professional athlete, but I went to one of Lenny Murillo's tryout camps, and I ran a 60-yard dash, and I was well below standard there, and I was a catcher, and they timed my throws to second base, and I was below average standard there, and Mr. Murillo gave me some career counseling that day, and said, well, maybe there's some other things that that you might like to do or some other skills that you might have that will help you develop your baseball career. And I always appreciated that because, I mean, Lenny had played for the Cubs a long time ago, and he was a renowned scout in the Northeast and throughout New England. He scouted for the Major League Scouting Bureau for years. But, I appreciated his feedback. And then, you know, from that time on, I had pretty much dedicated myself to, you know, following a career path that would get me into professional baseball or professional football on the administrative level.
So you started in baseball as a scout with the Milwaukee Brewers. We hear countless stories about how being a scout is a grind. You know, it's just hard work and out on the road all the time and traveling around to tournaments and high schools and whatever it may be. What do you remember most fondly about those days?
Well, you know, Harry Dalton was the GM of the Orioles, before that he had built with the Orioles, he had built their great team, 66, 70, 71. His greatest trade, of course, was he picked up Frank Robinson. But, you know, Harry was a terrific teacher. He groomed several executives, including Lou Gorman, had a terrific career. And then John Sherrill is one of the best executives I've ever seen.
Right.
He was trained by Harry and Lou in Baltimore and went on to have a great career in Kansas City, where he won the World Series, and, of course, in Atlanta, where he still is a top-level executive. But, you know, Harry took me into the office, and he said, I'll train you. He goes, I'll give you a set of skills that you can utilize to make a livelihood, and that'll be your player evaluation skills. And then he paired me up, and he mentored me. He paired me up with his best scouts, his best pro scout, Ray Scarborough. I traveled with him. His best amateur scout, Walter Yowes from Baltimore. I traveled with him in the amateur level. I went out scouting or did some office work and was overseen by Walter Shannon, who had worked for Branch Rickey with the Cardinals years ago, and he was one of Harry's lieutenants. So Harry gave me a broad-based program. One of the jobs that I had was that I was the area scout for Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, and Minnesota for the Brewers because we didn't have an area scout there. And not only did I work in the office, I got to go and work that area. Did a lot of tryout camps in the summer, a lot of promotional work. And then, got a chance to participate in the draft for the first couple of years working out of the office, which I really appreciated. That gave me an ability to look through the prism of an area scout's job. And Harry's big thing was, I'm going to expose you and put you in a lot of jobs so that when you get to be the top executive for the baseball operation, that you know what a good job is in all those jobs. So I was very fortunate to work with some good veteran people. And of course, Bud Selig was the owner of the Brewers at the time, and he taught me how to run a Budget there. But Bud's nickname was Budget Bud. You know, he was a stickler. He'd grind you up on your submissions for the budget, but he knew how to get the most out of the budget and how to get the most efficient use of the dollars to put together a winning team. So I was grateful for the training that Harry gave me with his great baseball people, and to Bud Seeley, who taught me how to run a budget and, you know, get the most out of it.
You have an incredible eye for baseball talent. There's no denying that. We could go on for the next 20 minutes just listing all the players you've identified, drafted, signed, and developed over your career. I just wonder, do you ever look back and say, wow, that was really impressive what I was able to do, or I'm really proud of this moment, or is it always just looking forward onto the next moment?
Well, everybody has, certain gifts that they have, or certain talents that, you know, they can bring to bear in the marketplace. I just happened to know who the best players were. And I think I learned that, you know, playing ball in the backyard, picking up teams. I just always knew who the best athletes were, who the best players were. I don't know if it was intuitively or, my father was in personnel. He was the superintendent of the schools, and he hired all the teachers. And he used to tell me what traits he'd look for to hire the best teachers. And I just had a knack for it. It was something that came easy to me. And then, of course, with the training of the Dalton gang, you know, they gave me all the technical indicators to look for. And that's I've been able to make a living, fortunately.
Well, what trait? Now you have your. I have to ask, what traits did your father look for? What did he tell you that he looked for when hiring staff?
My father looked for teachers, one that felt that it was their, calling in life to teach other people and to pass on their knowledge. And if you ask my father what was the most fulfilling part of his career, he started out as a reading teacher. He would talk about how he taught an eighth grader to read that previous to that grade didn't have reading skills. My dad liked making a connection with people and helping them develop skills. And, you know, he looked for people with those same kind of traits that had an enthusiasm, an even-keeled disposition, and were very passionate about helping other people through education.
So a love for the game, which makes a lot of sense. As a scout, I imagine, and as an executive, when you're making decisions, I imagine you really have to trust what you see. And you have to have great confidence in how a player will project or how a decision will look in the future. How did you learn to really trust yourself? Because so many young people that I speak with have a trouble trusting what they see or what they believe, or even having faith in their own opinions. How did you kind of learn that skill, that confidence?
Yeah, well, you know what they say, you can't be an expert until you make a lot of mistakes.
True.
And through trial and error, over the years, I learned what skills played at what position when it came to Major League Baseball players, I think you just have to trust what you see, and then put that against what skills you know are required by the job. Like if you take a look at Bill Belichick, one of the great coaches of all time in the NFL, he has a profile for each position of all the skills that he likes to see at those positions, based on size, based on speed, based on toughness. And everybody in that organization knows the type of players that he's looking for to fill each of those positions and the skill set. I think that if the organization does a good job, they tell you what to look for. They show you what it is that they're looking for, and then they give you a chance to go out there and do it. There's a lot of video assets, of course, where you can teach the scouts. exactly what you're looking for. But in terms of, you know, gaining confidence in my judgment, you know, that took a lot of mistakes. That took a lot of time, and, you know, fortunately, people had patience with me along the way.
Yeah, for sure. So as fans, we first get introduced to a player at the draft. I mean, most of us aren't following high school sports or watching the college tournament scene or anything like that. So we see a player at the draft and we get excited about it, right? And then there's this multi-year gap where we just don't really see that much of them. And we maybe hear a report from the minors or, you know, this guy's doing great or whatever it may be, but we don't really think about them too much until they make it to the way, all their way to the majors. But within the organization, this period of time from acquisition until actually making it to the majors, that development phase, is hugely important. What would you say are the key components as you see it in this player development phase?
Well, yeah, that's good. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about player development, because that's what we're going to be talking about on this course we're doing for SMWW, Sports Management Worldwide. I mean, you know, player development is really developing the skills those a player needs to be a successful major league player, and that is developing the skills, the physical skills, of course, that they need at their position, and then teaching them how to practice properly, so that they develop the habits along the way that'll help them be successful in their job. And so, if I were to say what is good player development, it's having a good educational plan for each player, and having a baseline when they start in the organization, and that would come from your original scouting report and any tests that you'd give them prior to hiring them and them starting out on their major league career. And then juxtaposing those skills against the skills that you need to compete at the major league level. You know, what are this player's strengths? You know, how can he help you win a game? And then capitalizing on those and coming up with a program to not only enhance those, but to help him address whatever limitations he has that might hold him back from getting to the big leagues and being a competitive player for the club.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you're launching a new online class along with our friends at Sports Management Worldwide, and you're teaching this very concept of player development. It's a really big subject. So how do you, it's an 8-week online course. What are some of the main points you're going to focus on? How are you going to really educate this audience of people that will be hanging on your every word to learn what it's like being in player development from the executive side? What are you going to focus in on?
Well, I'm going to rely on some of the great baseball minds to give the students a broad-based understanding about what player development is. So we're going to read Paul Richards, the great Oriole manager. We're going to read his modern baseball strategy, and we're going to focus on how Paul Richards played percentage baseball as early as the 50s. With the Orioles, and what kind of development program he had in place that are really tried and true throughout Major League Baseball. And then we're also going to focus on another great executive, probably the preeminent executive in the history of baseball, Branch Rickey. We're going to read his little blue book, and you'll see how Branch Rickey was a visionary for his time. He started up the player development system, if you will, across baseball. So we're going to take a historical look at through a lot of Branch's quotes, and that'll give us a good foundation. And then we're going to take that to the pitching side. I mean, you could have a whole seminar on pitching, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You can do pitching, and pitching. So we're going to take a look at a critical look at how to be a successful major league pitcher. And then we're going to look at some of the other things that you have to do in player development to have a good mindset. We're going to read Tom Hansen's Play Big, mental psychological approach to developing the right mindset to succeed. So the students will get a good foundation in not only tried and true ways of Major League Baseball, but also to understand how to measure the skills required to identify major leaguers and how clubs today are are continuing to enhance their player development operation through the use of technology.
Do you feel confident this online course will help people who are aspiring to work in baseball, that will help set them towards a path, on the right path towards getting that job?
Well, I hope so. You know, we used a lot of this material when I was in three organizations. We particularly built a baseline of material from a terrific player development operation, probably the best player development operation I've ever been around. And that was with the Expos. And then when I went to the Red Sox, we had to build up our player development operation. So a lot of the successful people that came through the Red Sox organization got a good bit of this type of training there. And then we turned the Red Sox around and built a first-rate organization that ended up winning the 2004 World Series. And then when I went to the Orioles and 2012, a lot of the staff people there, particularly on the player development side, enjoyed a lot of this same material. A lot of the managers, the coaches there, you know, to give them a foundation and to understand exactly what the club was looking for in good player development. So this material has trained a lot of professional people and helped them in their job. And I'm sure it will give a good foundation to anybody that's interested in player development across a number of professional sports by giving them the basic concepts and understanding about, you know, what it's all about.
For anyone listening who's interested in this course that Dan's launching very soon, you can go to smww.com and get more information on the course. It does sound really fascinating, Dan. I wonder, just hearing the way you talk about player development and how you really respect what was happening with the Expos and you've seen it work with the Red Sox and the Orioles, was this one of your favorite parts of being a GM? Was this development phase of after acquisition, getting the player to reach their full potential?
Yeah, you know, when I left the Brewers in 1987, I had my last 2 years I was a scouting director there, and Mr. Dalton had always told me that the director of player development job, or the farm director, was the job where he had the most fun over the course of his career. And he always told me that it was good training in regard to assembling a major league club, because not only did you have to put the teams together, but you had to come up with individual educational plans for all the players and then help them develop the skills they needed to progress throughout the system and get to the big leagues. So when I got to Montreal, I went there as the director of player development. And, you know, it's a job that once you're in it, it takes up a lot of time, because you've got to oversee, you know, six or seven teams and a number of people. So all your communication skills, have to work.
Yeah.
If you're going to have an efficient operation, people have to know what their job is, what's expected by them. And then of course you have to come up with a system to hold them accountable. But it's a terrific job. It's a job that I had the most fun in. And, you know, we were fortunate to have some great, great players with the Expos. Larry Walker just got in the Hall of Fame, Marcus Grissom, Moises Alou,
Kirk Reeder, Rondell White.
Yeah, Kirk Reeder, Rondell White. Yeah, Reeder came up. He was a top starter for a long time.
Yep.
Gary Hughes, the scouting director, was telling me that they got like 60 players that come through the farm system and got to the big leagues. Wow. Over like a 5-year period. So it was like about 11 or 12 per year that were coming through that farm system. I mean, just an unbelievable and productive system. It was great. I loved it. And I'm sure we'll get a lot of people with a passion for player development that'll, you know, get a lot out of this course.
For sure. You've been the architect of many famous transactions. As a growing up Red Sox fan myself, trading for Pedro Martinez, signing Manny Ramirez to a huge contract, trading for Derek Lowe and Jason Varitek, there's probably 50 more I could list from just your days with the Red Sox. I'm curious about your mentality, though, as you approach any deal. I mean, these are huge transactions. There's massive amounts of money on the line. There's future of the of the organization. Are you resolute in these decisions, knowing it's the right move, or do you allow for any like doubt or fears or inhibitions? Like, I look at this and think, I probably wouldn't sleep for weeks as I led up to a decision like this, and yet you seemed able to pull them off really easily. Well, what's your mentality in these moments?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the system that Harry taught us all as executives was to put a specific value on each position and to understand how to put all those ingredients together to build a winning club. Now, of course, if you're going to have a winning club and sustain it over a long period of time, the one recurring theme that all these clubs do well, if they're going to be competitive year in and year out, is have a good player development operation. Okay, that's the standard. That's what you have to do across the board. That's the philosophy that Branch Rickey put in place across the industry, and that's true today. If you're going to have a good team year in and year out, you got to have a good player development operation. Okay, teams can't question that. That's just fundamental. Understanding what goes into player development for a Major League Baseball operation, because it's so key, and then communicating that, you know, to the fan base so they understand, you know, where you are in the process of having a good player development operation. Where are those players in regard to coming up to help the Major League club? Where are they in their development? You know, they're for example, like Kansas City, they had all those players together in the minor leagues that came up to the big leagues, did well. They won the pennant in 2014. They beat us in the LCS, and then they got back and they won the World Series. But all those players came through the system. Kansas City had a good player development operation. They were there. They competed. They won. Then they had to start the cycle over again, to rebuild their organization. I mean, what did they do? They relied on the player development operation to help them build the team. And then after that team had its day in the sun, and they had to rebuild again, they had to rely on their player development operation again. So, you know, that just shows the importance of it for teams, especially the small market teams that are trying to compete. You know, these big clubs, they got more resources, they got more money. But the lifeblood of those small market teams has got to be in player development.
So as a fan, we see the game through the 4 hours a night on the field. Like we see, you know, you obviously read newspaper reports and you see highlights and do whatever else. But really, we live through those 4 hours a night on the field. But there are huge staffs of people behind the scenes we never see. There are hours of time spent together traveling and practicing and training and all the other components that go into a fully functioning organization. How important is it as the GM to establish an overall positive culture? Like, how do you develop the culture and a set of expectations and all of those things? And is that important? Is that something the GM worries about? Or are you more worried about the day-to-day operations of just the team? Or do you try to establish an organizational culture as well?
Well, I think the organizational culture is key if you're going to succeed. You know, people have to know what's important to the organization. But more importantly, you have to show them what's important by the decisions that you make during the course of your time there. So establishing a winning culture is really setting out the guidelines and then showing some leadership, not just setting out the guidelines and saying one thing. You got to walk the talk, right? leadership within an organization is more about what you do. And the good leaders, they'll tell you what they're going to do, and then they'll go out and they'll do it. When there's a gap between what people tell you and what they do, you know, to me, that's not effective leadership. But if you're going to run an organization, you got to set out the guidelines, the expectations, hold people accountable, and then you got to have some credibility. You got to do what you say you're going to do. to lead that organization into a winning team. And to me, that's how you would create a good environment. We're going to go over that in the class too. You know, what are some building blocks that you can put in place to help yourself so that when you get an opportunity to be in player development, you know, you maximize that opportunity.
Yeah, establishing a winning culture. I like that. When you were the GM of the Expos, there wasn't quite the same immediate attention and scrutiny as there would later be as the GM in Boston. When you came to Boston looking back, of course you knew, you know, what to expect a little, but were there any eye-opening moments for you that you remember from the early days with the Red Sox? Anything that stands out?
Yeah.
Dan
yeah,
Shaughnessy?
I'll tell you what stood out. I got to Boston, and my very first day at Fenway Park, it was opening day. It was 1994. I took the job on February, first part of February 1994. And I walked up out of the dugout. My team had not thrown a pitch. We hadn't played a game. And one of the fans screamed at me, "Hey, Duquette, you bum, get some pitching."
Welcome to Boston.
Welcome to Boston, right? So that wasn't necessarily the media, right? That was the passion of the fan base. That had some huge challenges in a major market that you don't have in a smaller market. Like, Montreal is a big market for hockey, but it's not such a big market for baseball.
Yeah.
So, that story just really, demonstrates the passion of the fans in those major markets. Any major market, you see that in the soccer teams around the world where fans are very passionate, but that's all good. And part of the job of an executive is to communicate with the fans, communicate with the writers. And I think that I learned a lot from my experience in Boston that made me a better executive. And one of the things that I could have done is be more communicative with the people that were covering the ball club day in and day out. And I made a point of making sure that I did that when I got to Baltimore.
So you're an ideas guy. Baseball seems like it's in a bit of a crisis right now, I guess you could say, maybe not just for the, the sign stealing stories and all that kind of things, but it just seems like the game in some degree has lost a little bit of its youthful audience. So in your eyes, what does baseball need to do a better job of?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm sure MLB has a lot of focus groups that they work on. I know from my time of running a youth sports operation, one of the things that MLB could do a better job on is really how we process young players learning the game and coming into baseball. Baseball, as is a little bit harder to learn than the other sports. It takes more fine skills, if you will. Hitting a baseball is hard, but also throwing overhand is hard. That's not the most natural thing to do. So, processing players at the young level, giving them an opportunity, to continue to play. The game at the major league level is terrifically entertaining, but I'm sure there's some things that we can do to, catch people's attention. I've always looked at baseball as a family outing, and having as many things to entertain the entire family around the ballpark and at the ballpark has always been a staple of having a good organization. So, as many things as baseball can have that are, that fans can participate in as part of that overall experience, like seeing the veteran players that have played in the organization, learning some of the skills that the players are doing on the field around the ballpark. I'd like to see a little bit more of that, and then processing young players as they come into baseball. Not just baseball players, but also softball players. I think that MLB could do a better job with.
Dan, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and sharing so much of your expertise. We'll finish up with this because I know you're a busy guy and you have a lot to get back to. If you were going back today, you're starting college all over again with the dream of working in baseball, what would your strategy be?
Well, I would probably try to get an internship while I was going through college with a team or an operation to see if I liked it. And, I live on the Cape Cod, and, you know, Cape Cod, for the baseball players that come here, it's the preeminent summer college league, but it's really a summer college internship for the players that are considering to go into pro ball. So if I was in college, I'd try to get with one of those preeminent summer college leagues. The New England Collegiate Baseball League is a good one. The Cape Cod League is a good one. The Northwoods League is another good one. And see if I liked it. And then, you know, baseball is the kind of thing that you're going to have to spend a lot of hours at the ballpark. You might as well find out if it's for you while you're in college. And if you have a real passion for it, you know, you'll meet a lot of the people that are passionate about it like you. And you'll find out that, you know, this is something that you want to commit to. If on the other hand, if it's not for you, you'll find that out too. So I think that's probably the best advice I could offer.
Yeah, do you think
coming through today?
For sure. And taking your player development course, of course. But I wonder too, is there any specific skill like that you would focus in on too, possibly developing? Is there a certain trend that you've seen in your most recent years in baseball that is a developing aspect of the game that maybe would set somebody up for success?
I would say your ability to communicate effectively, to speak clearly, to write clearly, and then also an ability to listen, would be key skills that you could develop now that'll serve you well in the future.
I love it, Dan. That's great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. For anybody interested, Dan's launching his new online course in player development through Sports Management Worldwide, which is you can find at smww.com. Thanks again, Dan. This is great stuff.
All right. Thanks a lot, Brian. My pleasure. Take care.
I have to admit, growing up in Boston and being a huge Red Sox fan, Dan Duquette was someone that I really watched and studied and tried to understand his decision making and how he handled himself with the media and how he chose players and, you know, built the entire team and organization. So it was a real thrill for me to get a chance to speak with him and learn from him. And I love his perspective on so many things. I would like to repeat to everybody one thing that he said that I want you all to remember. And I'm not a big quote guy, as you all know, but when he said this, I perked up. He said, you can't be an expert without making a lot of mistakes. So that goes to making choices and doing things and being active. You're not going to make mistakes if you're not out there being curious and trying to do better and trying things. And you will make mistakes. We all will. But don't let that hold you back. Don't let that be the end of the story. That's not a period. Making a mistake is a learning process. And you only make mistakes if you're trying things. So to become an expert, to really get to that high level, you got to be trying things, you got to be curious, you got to be learning through your mistakes, and that's when you'll get to a point where you've really refined yourself to this point of expertise. And that was something that really resonated with me, so I want to make sure I reiterated it today. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. It's such a pleasure to have you in our audience. Please rate and review wherever you listen. Subscribe to the podcast, share with your friends, talk to us as often as you can, because I like to learn from all of you as well. And I think it's time to get back to work.